You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. The Radio Cafe is brought to you by the City of Santa Fe Water Conservation. As you know, if you're living here in Santa Fe, we had a warm winter and we didn't get enough snow. The snow brings the water we need, and as a result, New Mexico's drought is currently among the worst in the United States. As the summer heats up, water restrictions in Santa Fe will be coming into effect, and we're being called upon to renew our conservation efforts and learn more about what we can do to value our water. Visit facebook.com/SaveWaterSantaFe to take the City of Santa Fe's new drought online quiz and learn not just about the current condition of the drought, but also how to contribute to long-term efforts to maintain a healthy, green, and water-wise Santa Fe. This program is brought to you by Total Wine and More. With locations in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, each store has about 8,000 different wines from all over the world, and thousands of beers, including both major brands and microbrews and imported beers. And they have more than 3,000 different kinds of spirits, all at the lowest prices you'll find, and with a trained, knowledgeable staff. They're on the web at totalwine.com, and you can order for in-store pickup. And if you use my promo code, you can save even more. Use code 6979 at the store or online and receive $10 off on your next $50 purchase. That's code 6979. Thanks again to Total Wine and More for sponsoring the Radio Cafe. I'm very happy now to welcome Susan Turetsky. She's founder and executive director of the Landlord-Tenant Hotline right here in Santa Fe. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here with you, Mary Charlotte.
Good to have you back. The question of the rights and responsibilities of landlords and tenants is an ongoing issue fraught with problems and conflicts that never end, and it's very important to have somebody to mediate. And in fact, you are a certified mediator.
That's correct. I took the 40 hours of the theory and practice of mediation at the University of New Mexico Law School several years ago. And, you know, a lot of these issues can be very easily negotiated, mediated between the parties before it escalates to expensive litigation.
Exactly. So both landlords and tenants have problems. What are the most common problems that come to your office?
Well, the most common problem for the landlord is the tenant is not paying the rent timely. The most common problem for the tenants is that the landlord is not taking care of the property. They're not fulfilling their obligation to make the repairs that fall under the obligation of the owner.
And so, I mean, basically, everybody has to live up to their responsibilities, and often they don't, or sometimes they don't. Do you find that there are more, like, quote-unquote, bad tenants or bad landlords? Or is it kind of evenly distributed?
It's very evenly distributed, because the reason for it is that they're not bad people. They just do not understand their rights, obligations, and remedies under the Uniform Owner-Resident Relations Act. The Uniform Owner-Resident Relations Act are the landlord-tenant laws. There's 52 sections of the laws.
Which you have memorized.
Huh. I could go to sleep at night, and if somebody called at 3 o'clock in the morning, I could tell them what the section is. I've been doing this now for almost 24 years.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, if you know what your obligations are, if you know what your rights are, it's pretty easy to factor the whole thing out.
And so this is state law, right?
Yes. It's all over the state of New Mexico. Landlord-tenant laws are state laws. They vary. They differ from state to state. So a lot of people maybe will come in, let's say from California, that's just a hypothetical example. They'll come in with a California lease. Well, that isn't, you know, there are sections of that lease that won't fly here in New Mexico.
So you actually provide, one of the things that you have is there's kind of a landlord kit that has leases in it and that has the rules in it that landlords can just use. And then that's just a template, so they don't have to reinvent the wheel.
That's right. It's very easy. I mean, I found the whole thing really intriguing and interesting. It's not a difficult situation. If you take in a new tenant, you want to know who you're letting into the property. So they fill out an application. You send it to a background check or a credit check facility, okay? A lot of landlords, I teach workshops for landlords, and I also teach workshops for licensed realtors and property managers, and I have done some judicial education for the judges and clerks. I've been at this a long time. You need to know who's coming into your property. If you pick the wrong person as a landlord, you're stuck.
Yeah.
Okay?
Because they've signed a lease and that's a legal contract.
That's right.
What are some of the stickier situations that you've seen over the years?
Well, I can tell you one funny story, and I'll tell you, my husband always used to say, you need to write a book. There was a landlord who I knew. I mean, he came into the office a lot of times, and he rented the house to an older couple, and they were in their night clothes, and they were watching television, and six kids came into the house with a key and a lease, and it was late at night. I mean, it was dark outside, and the gentleman said, "What are you doing here? What are you?" And the kid said, "We got a lease. We got a contract." And the older man said, "I'm the tenant. We are the tenants here." And the kid said, "Well, so are we." So they called the police. The police said, "Call the landlord-tenant hotline." So the next day, I had them all come into the office. And then, because I knew this landlord, I mean, I've had experiences with him, I said to the to everybody, I said, "Can you all step out in the hall for a few minutes? I want to talk to the landlord alone." And I said, "Landlord, did you rent the house to these two people, these two older people?" He said, "Yes, I did." I said, "And landlord, did you also rent the house to these six kids?" He said, "Yes, I did." I said, "Can you tell me what you were thinking?" He said, "Susan, it's a big house. There's room for everybody."
Oh, my God.
That was one of the strangest. One of the strangest.
So what happened?
Well, I mean, I said to him, "You know, we're going to have to either negotiate and settle," which we did, "or it's going to go to court. So it's up to you, okay?" And so, you know, we mediated the whole thing. He gave them each a little amount of money, and they were satisfied, and they found another place.
Who found the other place?
The kids. The kids.
Okay. Now, we have here in Santa Fe, a much talked about housing crisis. There seems not to be enough rental space. The price of real estate in general has gone up. How does that affect what you are seeing when that's coming into your office?
Well, I'm seeing that the rents are going up because there's a shortage, and it's a big shortage. The city of Santa Fe is 2,500 rental units short. So it's almost that a landlord can step out on the porch and whisper, "House for rent," and it'll be rented in a minute, okay? Yeah. Because there's such a shortage. On the other hand, because the rents are going up, the tenants are struggling to pay the rent. And the law, you know, there are 52 of these sections of the law, and under payment of rent is due without demand, without notice, at the time and place agreed upon by the parties. So there's a lease. It tells you how much the rent is. And a lot of these people are doubling up. I mean, they're bringing in more people so that they can share the cost of the rent, which makes it harder on the property, too. So it is a dilemma.
One of the things that sometimes happens is, I know, for example, a case of a landlord, and a very small-time landlord, had one rental unit, lived next door. The woman renting it was unreasonable, asked for things that didn't really need to be done. Then when the repair person came to do them, said, "Oh, I'm not ready, go away," even though the person had noticed. What do you do with difficult tenants like that?
Yeah, you know what? First of all, we have to look at a couple of sections of the law. First one is the obligation of the owner, section 47-8-20. That is the obligation of the owner. And it starts out by saying the owner shall, okay? And shall is a legal word. It means you have no choice. They have to make repairs to keep the property safe. They have to maintain the electrical, heating, plumbing, ventilating, air conditioning if it's there, the sanitary lines, and any appliances they supply the tenant with. The tenant has to have running water at all times, reasonable amounts of heat and hot water at all times. That's the obligation of the owner. On the flip side, 47-8-22, the tenant has to keep everything in good working order and not disturb their neighbors, act in a reasonable manner, so on and so forth. So in the situation that you're describing, this landlord's got a problem. If the tenant won't let him in, it's the tenant's house, okay? If the tenant won't let them in, they can't go in.
Even if they've already gotten notice.
Yes. And the only way that the landlord can remedy this situation, if the tenant doesn't let them in, is they have to go to court and they have to seek relief from the court. And it's called injunctive relief. And they ask the judge to either compel access or terminate the rental agreement because it's unreasonable. I mean, they've set up an appointment. Now, there are circumstances where the landlord can go into that house without any notice, and that's if they're accompanied by a cable person, you know, like Comcast or something like that. If there's anything going on in the neighborhood, they can get into the property without consent, okay? They don't have to have any kind of an appointment. Other than that, the landlord has to give the tenant 24-hour written notice, and that written notice tells the tenant when, why, and how long they're going to be there. Tenant won't let them in, can't go in. If that happens again, landlord can take them to court and seek injunctive relief, compelling access, or terminating this rental agreement.
Can the landlord, under those circumstances, also say, okay, well, you wanted another outlet for your TV or whatever. We're not going to do it since you didn't let us in.
Well, you can't do it. And having another outlet for a TV is not under the obligation of the owner, right? Okay? Everything has to be in good working order that's there. Electrical, heating, plumbing, ventilating, air conditioning, sanitary lines, appliances. Some of these tenants will ask for things that do not fall under the obligation of the owner. Also, another issue is most leases, and it should be in there, most leases will say that the tenant cannot make any repairs or improvements to a rental property without the landlord's written consent. Written, okay? Anything between a landlord and a tenant should be in writing.
What if there's an emergency? Can the landlord then go in without notice?
Always. Fire, flood, emergency, whatever it is. That's why the landlord always should have a key to the property.
Yeah. Now, you said a moment ago everything should be in writing. Mm-hmm. I know of cases where there's been a phone call where the tenant or the landlord said one thing and then later they say another. So every phone call should be followed up with an email or a letter or something.
Yes. If, for example, I'll give you an example. Let's say that the tenant has lived in the property for a couple of years and wants to paint one wall burgundy. And the landlord says, that's fine, you can do that. The tenant should say to the landlord, you know, that's great, I really appreciate that, thank you very much, but I need something in writing for my files. And that's another issue, that when you have a landlord or a tenant, you should have a single file folder with anything that goes between you, the lease, the application, anything that goes between you, any correspondence should be in that file. Because at the end of the day, you don't have to satisfy the tenant or the landlord. You may have to satisfy the court.
One of the things that's very important then, and that often becomes problematic, is the giving back of the security deposit.
The deposit law, 47-8-18.
She's not looking at the notebook either. She knows this stuff by heart.
It's right in here. That's the deposit law. And what it says is that and I got a good story to tell you about that one. The landlord shall mail the tenant an itemized statement of deductions and any payment required to the last known address within 30 days of the termination of tenancy or when the tenant moves out, whichever is last. If the landlord does not do this and can't prove it to the court that he did or she did do this, okay, the landlord forfeits every defense they have under the deposit law. The tenant gets a full refund, full deposit. The landlord cannot hold them responsible for anything. They're under the bus. So here's the good story about that one. This will keep your listeners entertained. A young girl came into my office sobbing. I couldn't understand a word she was saying. I handed her a box of Kleenex and I said, you're going to have to dry up before you talk to me. I don't hear so good to begin with, and now I can't understand a word you're saying. So she tried to dry up, and she said, they took my whole deposit. It was $400, the whole deposit. I said, did they do it within 30 days? Yes, she said they did it within 30 days, but they took the whole, and she's sobbing again. I gave her some more Kleenex. And so she says, I said, how did they itemize everything? Yes, she said. How much did it come to? $395. I said, did they give you the $5? No, Susan, they kept the whole thing. I said, well, now you can really dry up. Because the law says they are obligated to give you an itemized statement and any payment required. They were supposed to send her a check for $5. The landlord lost in court for $5.
So they had to give her the whole deposit back?
She got her full deposit back of $400, and boy, did she need it.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Well, then there are cases where if the landlord, you know, you have to give it back within whatever it is, 30 days.
30 days.
And if the landlord waits 33 days, mm-hmm. even if the tenant has had circus animals in the house that tore every single cabinet from the studs, if it's 33 days, they still have to give back the whole deposit.
They have to give back the whole deposit. They have no recourse. They have no, they can't go for any claims against that tenant whatsoever. So if you're a smart landlord, how would you deliver that? Either delivery confirmation. If you send something by certified mail, you should also send another copy by first-class mail, which is just a regular stamp, because there is no law that anybody has to pick up their certified mail. But you'll have proof for the court.
Yeah.
And that's what I always tell people, under that black robe, the court, the judge, does not have a quarter that he flips and says, heads you win, tails you lose. The one with the best documentation to present to the court is the one who's going to prevail. And under 47.848, it says whoever prevails in a court of law gets reimbursed for court costs and any reasonable attorney fees.
Now, have you seen cases of people kind of squatting in apartments, being in places where they're not supposed to be?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's an unlawful detainer. You have to, again, you have to go to court. The court is the only entity that can remove somebody from a property. The sheriff doesn't come without a court order. You have to go to court for that.
What are some examples? Like, what does that look like?
It's you write them a letter, tell them you expect them to get out of the property, you post it on the door. Now, the law does say if you post something on the door, you have to follow it up with a piece in the mail. And the law is so specific that it says that you have to if you post it on the door, you have to tape it on all four quarters. and you write on the document, post it to door and sent by first class mail. And you tell them you want them out of there, you know, a couple days. Then if they don't leave, you go to court and you seek relief from the court, and you take that letter, okay, and you say, I don't know who these people are. They're in the house. I asked them to leave. They won't leave, and I want the court to. I'm requesting that the court remove them from the property. And with that order, the sheriff will come, and he's got a loaded gun on his hip, and he says, you got a few minutes to get out of here.
Does that happen very often?
I don't think it happens too often.
What about issues with animals? Do you find that that is a source of disputes between landlords and tenants?
Well, the one issue that comes up about animals is that landlords will say, no pets. And somebody will come with a service animal or a companion animal. And the landlord will say, I told you, no pets. And then they call the hotline, and I have to explain to them, these are not pets. They fall under a different category. Service animals have to be registered. There's Animals of the West here. You can call and find out exactly what the requirements are.
Assistance Dogs of the West.
Yes, that's right. Assistance Dogs of the West. And the other thing is, if it's a companion animal, you can request a letter from a doctor stating why these people do need this companion animal. It is not a pet.
Yeah.
So you can't charge a pet fee. It's not a pet.
And those animals tend to be really good dogs,
essentially. Absolutely. Absolutely.
They don't mess stuff up.
Right.
Now, what is your, I know you're in there by yourself, and there's quite a large volume of people calling you every day, every week.
Aren't they lucky that I like to talk? No, you know what? It's my contribution to the entire state of New Mexico. It's my contribution. I feel like I've helped a lot of people over almost 24 years. And once the people understand what these sections of the law say, it's very easy to comply and not let it escalate so that you've got enemy warfare going on.
Right, right. And I suppose, in theory, any person could find, probably online, a copy of the statute, but finding your way through it and finding what parts are relevant is not easy.
That's right. When I talk to people, it's always now, you know, on the phone and online, okay? And when they're talking to me, I say, I'm not interested in all these details, you know, I keep a clean house, they're terrible people, and neither is the court. I mean, everybody says that, I keep a clean house, they're terrible, the other side is terrible. What I'm interested in, and I write this on the side of the paper when I'm listening to them, I'm writing the sections of the law down, what applies to that particular issue. And so, for example, let's say that a tenant calls and says, I have a leak under the kitchen sink. You know, I'll say, who pays the water there? I do. I said, oh, you know, that's hefty. I mean, water's expensive now and shouldn't be wasted. But either way, that falls under the obligation of the owner. Electrical, heating, plumbing, ventilating, air conditioning, sanitary lines and appliances. So here's what the tenant has to do. The tenant has to give the landlord a civil form. What is a civil form? That's a form that's been approved by the state Supreme Court. That's the form they really want you to use. And it's called a 7-day notice of abatement or termination. And they're requesting that this plumbing leak be fixed within 7 days from the date on this document. Now, if the last day falls on a Saturday, Sunday, or a federal holiday, of course they have to give them those days. There is also a time, the Supreme Court civil rights, civil procedure, I'm sorry. There's a time period. If you snail mail it to the landlord, you have to give him 3 extra days. But essentially, it's a 7-day notice to make the requested repairs because it falls under the obligation of the owner. So let's say that the owner blows him off and says, I can't afford to fix this. Put a pot under the sink. If the landlord makes no attempt to remedy this breach within 7 days from the date on the document, the tenant can terminate their own rental agreement if they want for noncompliance and go back to the court and sue for their losses, which would include the cost of their move because he didn't comply with his obligations.
Can the tenant call a plumber and get it fixed and pay the $150 or whatever, then deduct it from their rent?
No, because most leases will say that the tenant cannot make repairs or improvements to the rental property without the landlord's written consent. The tenant shouldn't do this. The tenant has to realize that they're renting this house, that the landlord has the obligation to do this. So they give them the civil form. If the landlord does make a reasonable attempt to fix that plumbing leak, but it takes longer than 7 days, the tenant can abate or withhold 1/3 of their daily rent from the date on the notice through the date that the plumbing leak is fixed.
Does that mean the rent is reduced?
Or yes. Yes. 1/3 of the daily rent. Mm-hmm.
That's, there's a lot to know.
It's my favorite subject.
Yeah, well, and you've been doing it for over 20 years.
Almost 24.
24 years. Do you serve Spanish-speaking clients at all?
You know, un poquito, pero lo siento mucho, pero yo no puedo hablar español good. So I would need some support. And I once had a woman come in, and she could only speak Spanish. And I said to her, necesita for another person to come in and help you, mm-hmm. Okay? Do you know she came in the next day with her 5-year-old granddaughter, and that little girl was bilingual. She was fabulous. And I said, ask your grandma how much her rent is. And she said it in Spanish, and yeah. She told me. And I said, that little girl, I mean, she's valuable. She's bilingual. She's 5 years old, and she can do it.
Amazing.
It
amazing.
Was.
And she didn't have to understand really the content of it. She just had to,
no,
had
she just,
to translate.
Yeah, she just translated.
Now, you've been doing this for so long. Are you ever going to retire?
No.
Are you going to?
And the answer is no.
Yeah, but I mean, eventually mm-hmm. you will want to presumably pass this knowledge on to somebody else.
You want it?
No.
There aren't too many people, okay? That's what concerns me. But hopefully, you know, I'll be here for a while. But there's really no funding for me. So there aren't too many people who would want to do this.
Well, I was going to ask you, I mean, you are a 501c3 nonprofit. I think you used to be funded or partially funded by the city of Santa Fe.
That's right.
That's no longer the case.
The city of Santa Fe gave me a grant for 16 years, and I reapplied, I think, 7 or 8 years ago, okay, for the grant. And we were sitting around the table, and there was the mayor, and there were attorneys and everything else. And one of the attorneys said to me, "This is the best grant proposal I've ever read." And I said, "Well, thank you." I said, "I guess my mother and father got their money's worth, because that was, English was my major in college." So he said, "But we can't give you the money." And I asked him why. And he said, "Because you don't talk to enough poor people." And that is blatantly not true. I mean, most of the landlords that I talk to have inherited these properties. So there's very few with deep pockets who call the landlord-tenant hotline. So this is my contribution.
So when you say people have inherited the property, we might be talking about New Mexican people who are in a house that goes way back. They're renting the casita or a room or a garage or something like that to somebody else, and there are conflicts, and they may not be able to afford expensive repairs, or something goes wrong. So it's that kind of situation.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, when these people inherit properties, they're not landlords. They're not professional. They don't know what they have to do. So if they call the landlord-tenant hotline, you know, I can explain this to them. And I do have workshops for just regular landlords.
Now, one of the things that you and I have talked about that I think is important is that this kind of mediation does save a lot of burden on the courts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it doesn't have to go to court. Unless what happens is, if the two parties, if the two parties to the disagreement can understand what their rights, obligations, and remedies are clearly, and I did teach school for 3 years. If they can understand their obligations, rights, and remedies, it can be resolved. It's the black letter of the law. If they can't agree, it's going to go to court. So I'm trying, my job is to make everyone aware of what they should do. I'll get calls from Joe's tenant, and then the next call comes from Joe. It's the same information. And I'll tell Joe, "I just talked to your tenants, okay?" But it's the same information. It doesn't change from Joe to the tenants.
Well, that's actually good. I would think that Joe would be saying one thing and Joe's tenant would be saying a different thing.
Yeah, well, but I'm looking at the 52 sections of the law,
yeah.
Okay? And if, in fact, what you're telling me is correct, Joe or tenant, then this is what the remedy is.
So how do you keep going as a nonprofit? Do you fundraise? Do you get contributions? I know that people have to pay a certain amount to access,
right.
Although it's not very expensive, but
no.
To access the hotline.
Right. I have to charge because, you know, I have to pay an accountant and I have to pay office supplies. There's expenses. I have put some of my own money into this just to keep it going. So, and there are people who make contributions, and we greatly appreciate that. And if anybody's listening and they want to make a contribution to the New Mexico Landlord-Tenant Hotline, it's a 501c3, and they can certainly call my number, 930-5666, and I'll tell them where to send the contribution.
505-930-5666. Susan Turetsky is founder and executive director of the Landlord-Tenant Hotline. Anything else you want to let people know before we go?
Yeah. I want you to know that if a tenant is month to month and the tenant requests a repair under the obligation of the owner cannot evict them or raise their rent for 6 months. That would be considered retaliatory.
Ah.
I want you also to know, and I'm talking to all the listeners now, I want you also to know that if you don't like your tenant and you're not happy with your tenant and you want them out of the property and they won't leave, there is nothing you can do except go to court. If you throw out their property, if you block their access, if you boot their vehicle, if you do anything like that, the tenant can sue you for 2 times the monthly rent plus their losses. Only the court can force the tenant from the property.
Now, on the other side, if you are a tenant and you don't pay your rent and you're going to be evicted, the landlord can keep your stuff if you don't take it with, you know, if you don't get it out.
Well, when you're evicted, there's 3 ways that the tenant leaves the property. They leave with a voluntary surrender, thank you very much. I had a good time. Goodbye and good luck. If there's stuff there, the landlord has to take care of it for 14 days and wait to give it back to the tenant. If the tenant abandons the property, the landlord has no clue where they are and they're behind in the rent, the landlord has to store the personal property for 30 days. If they are evicted by the court, the landlord only has to look after their personal property for 3 days, and after 3 days, the landlord can dispose of all said personal property in any manner without any further notice or liability.
So they can sell it on eBay or put it in the dumpster?
They can chop it up and make mulch. No further notice, no liability.
Very, very important information. Susan Turetsky, thank you so much for being with us.
It was a pleasure. I hope that all the listeners learned something. And if they need further help, call the Landlord-Tenant Hotline.
And I will be putting that contact information on radiocafe.org so you can find it all there. Thanks again, Susan.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services, providing computer repair and business services for Apple and PC. They're Santa Fe's only Apple-authorized service provider. You can find them on the web at dotfoil.com and in the Candyman Center in Santa Fe. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.